This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On the latest episode of The Sopranos, Vito Spadafore got whacked. Bad news for Vito, but not so bad for the actor who played him, my guest Joseph Ganascoli. He had a big part this season. A couple of guys collecting protection money at a gay bar spotted Vito dancing there. After word got out, Vito panicked, left his wife and two kids, and fled to New Hampshire, where he got involved in a relationship with the owner of a diner who he nicknamed Johnny Cakes. Vito lied to Johnny Cakes and told him he was a writer from Scottsdale working on a book about boxing. Here's a scene right after Johnny Cakes figured out that Vito wasn't who he said he was.
Are you even a sports writer? I mean, here we are talking about taking the next step in this relationship. I ask you to share my home, and you can't even be straight with me. This. Nice knowing you, Vincent.
Jimbo, come on.
I'm not a writer, okay? I'm not from Scottsdale. And the car's not my sister's. I'm actually from New Jersey.
I knew it.
Some went down. I had to leave. My home, my contracting business, my wife, my kids.
Are you drunk? It's not even 11 o'clock.
You think it's easy? I miss home so bad my heart's a f***ing lump. I'm barely holding together. Stuck in the sticks, running out of money. And now this? You think I was looking for you?
Soon after this scene, Vito decided to return to New Jersey, where mobsters were waiting to kill him. Joseph Ganascoli was a chef before he became an actor, and he recently co-authored a novel called A Meal to Die For. It's about a gourmet chef who's connected to the mob. Joseph Ganascoli, welcome to Fresh Air, and congratulations on this season. It was you've just been really good. It's been a great part for you, and it was really fun to watch you.
Thank you.
Now, you've said that it was you who suggested that Vito, your character, be gay. What made you think of suggesting that?
Well, it was from a book I was reading called Murder Machine by Jerry Capici. I used to write Gangland for Daily News. And I was just trying to find a way to broaden my character and give me more to do. And seeing that it did happen, there's something you never see really portrayed that much on mob shows, on movies, I thought it'd be interesting. And I brought it into, and this was in the middle of season three, I brought it to the attention of Robin Green and Mitch Burgess, who write and produce no longer anymore. But so they were interested in it. They said, oh, really? And I showed them the book and I gave it to them. And it's not exactly what I had in mind when that security guard, I was on the wrong end of that.
But, you're talking about the security guard in the car. Meadows' boyfriend, when he's working construction, sees you in a car in a compromising position with a security guard.
When I first heard about it, Gandolfini had said, we'll go talk to Chase. You don't have to do this if you don't want. And I said, no, I'll trust them. And I just asked that I just not show it, and that's the last we hear of it. I mean, because I was watching it with 20 people. I didn't tell them. And they were like, almost fell off their chair.
No, all the people in Tony's crew are revolted by the idea that Vito is a homosexual. And after Vito is outed, they no longer trust you. And it's obvious, pretty obvious right away. You're going to get killed eventually. Do you have any friends who are as homophobic as the characters in The Sopranos and who were revolted by your portrayal in the same way that the characters in the series were revolted by Vito when they found out who he was?
Yeah, my friends were like, how many times are you going to kiss this guy? And they would ask, if I would have killed 20 guys in a night, there would have been, I was a lot more pleased with that. But to be with another guy, it's something else. Anybody that's really vocal about it, I think they usually have some issues with themselves. I mean, I'm very secure. And if anything, I was a lesbian. I was chasing girls my whole life. And I just recently got married, so I never had a problem with it because I'm very secure who I am. I'm from Brooklyn also, and I go to restaurants that, known mob hangouts, and, some guys give me dirty looks, They're a little upset about it, but, I'm acting, and, it happens, and it's a role that maybe, you know, made a name for myself, so I don't have a problem with it.
Just as your character, Vito, is becoming sympathetic, you know, and we realize, oh, you know, this character's been repressed. He could have had a different life. He could have had a better life. You know, he didn't necessarily have to be, you know, killing people in the mob. Then, you know, you decide that even though you're in New Hampshire, and you miss your kids, and you miss part of your old life in the mob. So you leave New Hampshire, and you're driving on this, like, country road going back to Jersey, and you hit a car that stopped next to a mailbox, and the driver has been checking his mail. The driver insists that the accident has to be reported to the insurance company, and you can't afford to do that because then you'd be discovered and probably killed. So you just shoot him in the back of the head. And, man, I thought the writers were so brilliant in that scene because really you're not a good person in the series. You know, you've killed other people. You shot Jackie Jr. in the back of the head, and that's just like one of the things you've done. And you still have it in you to just be a killer. Did you like that scene?
Up until then, I thought I was very sympathetic. But one thing great about David Chase is that he doesn't want you really like these people. Whenever you know people start saying, "Hey, they're regular guys," you know, they're sitting around watching a game, we're at a strip place, or they're you know, just hanging out, and then they do something like when Paulie Walnuts had to kill his mother's friend just to give Tony, you know, some money, and when people are thinking like, "Yeah, you know, the guy just wants to, you know, live and let live," he shows them that that's who they are. They're killers. They're, you know, not nice people. And I was upset about that because, you know, I thought, you know, all these people are going to really think I'm a sympathetic character. And I did that. But that's what he does. He doesn't want you to like these people. That's who they are. And Vito missed a life. And he wanted to get back and, you know, get back in the mob life. And that's what he missed, the action. It was a little boring, although it was great seeing people, you know, gays living with straight people, getting along and live and let live. But it's that other life that he missed, and his kids, you know.
Let's talk about how you were killed. There's like three guys with bats who are waiting, baseball bats, waiting for you in your motel room.
Pool sticks.
Oh, pool sticks. Oh, I remember them as bats. Okay, they're pool sticks. Yeah. So and then Phil Leotardo, who's the number two in the New York mob, is just like sitting on the bed, watching as they beat you to death, and of course you're his brother-in-law. Can you talk about shooting that scene and how much of a beating you actually took in it?
Well, first of all, did you notice what Phil came out of, right?
What do you mean? What he came out of? Oh, he came from behind the curtain. You mean?
No.
Was it a closet?
Came out of the closet.
You know, in my mind, I always remember things wrongly. In my mind, he's like standing behind like the drapes in the room, and he comes behind. So he came out of the closet. That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah,
really
that's funny.
Funny.
That's David Chase's sense of humor.
Boy, that went right past me.
Yeah. So they, first of all, because of my, you know, I just had double hip replacement.
In real life.
Yes. 7 weeks ago. And you always see me limping on the show. Mm-hmm. And my legs are crooked. It's really hard to watch. Now, you know, I'm pain-free. I was in so much pain, but I'm pain-free. And so it was hard to do a lot of these scenes. And I for the most part, I try to do as much as I could. And, you know, in the fight scene, I couldn't get down. But I pushed the guy, and I did as much as I could, but it was very painful. But so I walked in, and they didn't really they didn't hit me. They hit the stunt double. Or did they hit me? I think they did hit me, but then I was down on the ground. They showed that. But a lot of the stuff my stunt double did. And that scene there, I mean, it was really pleading for my life, and it was very emotional. And
you're pleading with gaffer's tape over your mouth. You're trying to plead.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. They didn't use a lot of it, which I was surprised about. I remember I actually had chest pains because I was really, you know, pleading for my life, and I was upset that they didn't use more of it because I thought it was a great moment for me. Because you saw the terror in my eyes, you know.
What was it like for you to watch the scene in which you get beaten to death?
Well, you know, I had 60 people at my house watching it Sunday. It was a nice party. I knew something bigger was going to happen. But, you know, I was just thinking back, especially when in Paris, which they show too much of, but David Chase's wife is French, so when I heard that, the next episode, they're going to Paris, I was like, I said, oh, man, hopefully I'm going. Maybe I'd, throw me off the Eiffel Tower or I'd be death by foie gras, which would have been great. I'm the only guy in the show to play two different characters. I had one scene in the bakery when Michael Imperioli shoots the kid in the foot. You know, it's a little, again, a little homage to, or homage to Goodfellas when they shot him in the foot. But in the bakery scene, I played Gino, who was trying to get bread, and I get thrown out of the bakery, and Michael wants respect from this kid, and he shoots him in the foot. So I was looking, but just thinking back of all this, then they brought me back for Vito Spadafore, and I got that role, and then I got, when I heard first that I was killing Jackie Jr., I was just going back and thinking about that, knowing that the scene with the motel room is coming up, and it was coming to an end. But on this show, you never really end because you come back in dreams, and I'm hoping I do.
Are you going to come back in dreams?
I hope. I haven't gotten that call yet or that word, but that's only for an episode. Look, Drea, she was back, right, in that episode?
Oh, yeah. How much contact do you have as an actor in The Sopranos with David Chase, who's the, creator and the kind of key person in overseeing the series? Do you talk to him directly about where it's heading and where your character's heading?
Up until then, I didn't really see him much, talk to him much. I approached the writer, and then she told David, I guess, make him gay. He called me in the beginning of this year, wanted to know how much weight I had lost. And so so he knew how to write it in. It was a big thing in the first couple episodes. And then, that Thin Club ad we did, which was pretty cool. And then after when I was out of that, in the leather bar, I said, David, I'd like to talk to you. And I says, look, I just got married. I got a house now, mortgage. What's going on with my character? He goes, well, am I going to live? And he goes, no. You're going in 11 or 12. He didn't know yet. And he says, you sabotage yourself. So meaning that, I could live my life and everything would have been fine. Or, but you come back, you should miss the life. And that's what happens. And I think Tony would have let me live in AC. He was sticking up for me and Aaron, because I was going to give him $200,000 and he had some money coming in, but Phil got to me and that was it.
No, Tony was planning to kill you, though. He's just insulted
that
Phil Liotardo, took out one of his own guys, but Tony was going to get someone to kill you. Every time Tony has a good instinct, he thinks better of it.
Yeah, it's true. That's right. He says, no, he's got to go.
So this season, you lost a lot of weight in real life. I read it was like 160 pounds while the show was on hiatus.
Uh-huh.
Did you have to tell the people I lost 160 pounds, so you'd better write it in?
No. They know I did it. Maybe at the end of season 5, which is maybe almost 3 years ago now, I had the band. See, I was very thin, and then I started opening restaurants, and I started gaining weight, maybe 10, 12 pounds a year. I stopped going to the gym. I didn't have time to work out. Stopped being active, and then my hips were bothering me, so I didn't realize what it was. So I went less and less and started eating and drinking and gambling, which we'll get into about what's in my book. But 10, 12 pounds a year, and then finally I had enough. So I had the band done, the gastric band. And, I started, that was in the end of season 5 that I had it done. And when we came back, I just, was losing weight. So if maybe 2.5 year period. So they knew I had it done, and they knew that, there was going to be a weight loss. So they worked it into the script.
There's several characters on the show who are very heavy. I mean, over the years, Big Pussy, Bobby. Tony's put on a few pounds lately.
Yeah, Tony put on. Well, Bobby Bacala, they put a fat suit on him.
Oh,
that
really?
It wasn't his gut. Nine. And he's a big guy and he put on some weight, but that wasn't, he had a big gut on. They took it off him this year. Tony's put on weight, and I think that was for another role he did. And I think it goes with his character. I mean, that's an end joke. Nine times out of ten, anytime you see him, it's usually in the house, he's always eating.
Do you think your weight helped you get the part?
Yeah, I think I definitely did. I think they were looking for a big guy. I mean, there is a lot of big guys in the mob. You know, they eat. There's a story about this guy, undercover guy. He put on 80 pounds, you know, when he was doing undercover. You know, because it's all about restaurants and eating out and, you know, it's the life.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Joe Gennascoli, and he plays Vito Spadafore in The Sopranos.
Played,
yes. That's right.
We could use past tense now.
He's been whacked. It's all over for Vito unless he comes back in dreams. Uh-huh. But as for Joe Gennascoli, this is probably really good for you. I mean, you have so much attention now because of this this season that yeah. Probably open up doors for you.
And I hope so.
And also, I want to ask you about your novel. You have a novel that you co-wrote called A Meal to Die For.
Yep.
Subtitled A Culinary Novel of Crime. And this is about a guy who owns a restaurant that's you know, connected with small-time crime. You've worked in a lot of restaurants. You've owned one or more restaurants. Do people want to think that you've been connected? Does that give you, like, more cred as a Sopranos character?
Well, I think we all were at one point. We know guys that are in this life. You know, being from Brooklyn, I know who is and who isn't and what's their position and so on and so forth. But this book I wrote was loosely based on my life as a chef, and I was a bad gambler. I used to gamble a lot. I mean, that's what led me to acting. But I was, when I was gambling and losing, I used to lose, you know, you win, you lose, but you never beat the bookie. You never beat the odds. And one Sunday, I lost $60,000 gambling on football games. 15, 15, and then 30 was my get-even game. And if I ever win an award, I got to thank Cody Carlson because he was the backup quarterback for the Houston Oilers back in 1990. And it was a Sunday. They were resting their players for the playoffs. The Pittsburgh Steelers, number one defense, were resting their players. And Cody Carlson, the backup quarterback for Warren Moon, for like 500 yards. And I was just like sitting in there watching the game stunned and thinking, like, I just lost $60,000. I got to get out. I got to pay everybody off. I got to sell my interest in the restaurant. And I'm moving to L.A. to pursue acting.
What made you think you'd make money as an actor?
Back then, before you even answer that. When I was winning and losing, you know, I was, to help pay my debts off, I was became known as a food fence. And
what's a food fence?
A food fence, like a jewelry fence, but I knew how to move hot food. And wine with phony labels, homemade wine, we would make phony wine labels and sell them, you know, not what it was. Or oil transfusions, we call them, and, you know, canola oil cut with, like, some bootleg olive oil, and then we'd, recan them or we'd rebottle them. So I knew how to do that.
So you basically put cheap food in fancy bottles.
Yeah, it wasn't what it said it was. Not that it was bad. I mean, you know, I said a little integrity, but it just wasn't what it said it was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so on. So
you felt okay about doing that?
Well, at the time, I was like hustling, you know. It was something I would use, but it just wasn't what it said it was, and, you know. I was hustling. That's what we do in Brooklyn.
So you didn't mind that you were taking advantage of people?
Well, back then, I have more scruples now or some, but and that's what the book's about. But, you know, this is how I hustled. You know, if someone said, listen, I got this shrimp, can you move it? And I say, yeah, I'd move it.
Okay, now in movies and TV shows, when that happens, what happens is in the long run is that this character who got in, you know, who put his toe in the water in dealing with the mob ends up kind of getting deeper and deeper and deeper until he drowns, you know, until he's like so deep into crime that he's either, you know, put behind bars for life or he's killed by one of the other mobsters. How are you able to be a food fence and then get out?
Well, I mean, it didn't always, I just, I lost everything and I said I was getting out. You know what I mean? I mean, I cashed out and...
And no one said to you, you can't leave now, Joey.
No. It wasn't like that. I said, listen, I'm done. you guys, you know, I'm getting out of the restaurant business. I just lost a ton of money, and I'm going to pursue acting. And, I mean, in real life, when I was doing it, I was chef of a restaurant in Manhattan, and someone asked me to be in a play of a good friend of mine, who was actually was a Jesuit. So this guy was going to be a priest, but then he got out of the Jesuit, and he was working as a waiter, and he asked me to be in this play. It's called The Juice Man, about the loan shark on the docks. And I liked it. I got it, and I liked it. And I got out of the restaurant business. I started selling ice cream from a cart in Wall Street, and just studied acting.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Let's get back to our interview with Joseph Scannascoli, who played Vito Spadafore on The Sopranos. Vito was killed in the latest episode. Scannascoli also co-wrote a crime novel called A Meal to Die For about a chef connected to the mob. Scannascoli used to be in the restaurant business. When we left off, he was telling us that he decided to get out of the business and pursue acting after he lost $60,000 gambling.
I called up my friend Tim Kelleher, who's a working actor. And I said, Tim, I told him what happened. He goes, I said, I'm just going to go out in L.A. and pursue it. And I did that for 3.5 years, just getting bit parts, and I was hustling. But, you know, I was tired of being broke again. I moved back to L.A. My family wouldn't even talk to me for the first year because of, you know, what I did. I lost everything. I left this girl I was seeing and so on. And then I was, working menial, cooking in jobs, cooking in the restaurants and not making much money. I was tired of that. But, you know, again, because I'm from Brooklyn, what I used to do is, you know what the breakdowns, I don't know if you know what the breakdowns are.
Is that for betting?
No.
Oh.
Breakdowns are what the casting directors...
Oh.
Yeah, send out to what they'll, you know, for episodes and movies, episodic TVs. And if they're looking for a character, say, 40 years old, 6 lines, balding, you know, it's a description of what they need for the movie or the episode, you know? And the only one that get these breakdowns are the agents. So I started working with this agent out of his house, but he was a young kid. He wasn't like, you know, I'd be up at 6 o'clock, where I'm going to go, drinking coffee, waiting until 9 o'clock so I can go to his house and help him go through it just to see what's out there. And I was wondering if they were submitting me. Well, he's submitting me for the, you know, sending my picture. And then hopefully I get the call. And I'd say, did you call? Did you call? Did you call? So this lasted about 2 weeks. And I was driving him nuts, you know. So I says, you know what? I don't really trust this guy. I don't think he's doing the right job. So I would go up, wake up at 5 in the morning, run to his house, grab these breakdowns, run to Kinko's, copy them, then bring them back to his house, and then I would go through them myself. And I started submitting my own picture. And then I would call up in a few days and say, listen, my name is James Hoving. I'm Joe Ganascoli's manager. I'm in town for a few days, and I want to make
sure
that it...
You would pretend that you were James Hoving, Joe Ganascoli's manager? Okay.
Yes. And I would... they'd say, who are you? I said, James Hoving. I'm Joe Ganascoli's manager. I want to make sure I'm in town for a few days. I want to make sure that he gets seen for this role. And they go, what? Where'd you say you were from? And I say, I'd have to say it, and I change my answering machine at home, say, James Hoving talent. I say, you know, I have an East Coast and a West Coast office. And that's how I started getting auditions. That's how I got my first role. And I got my SAG card.
Did anyone discover this, like, little con game you were playing?
No. And then my roommate, who Tim, you know, the Jesuit, he says, listen, I need a James Hoving call. Can you call for me? And I'd say, call for him. You know, the funny story is that he wanted to get seen for a Bobby Kennedy movie. And I said, listen, you got to see Tim Kelleher. He's great. As a matter of fact, I signed him when he was playing all 3 Kennedys in an off-Broadway play, and because his agent wanted to get him in, and I got him into he didn't get the role, but I got him in for the audition. So everybody was asking me to make James. I even Hoving calls because I started submitting. You know, I said, listen, there's a thing that's being cast you're really right for. So submit yourself, and I'll call up and. I was doing people favors, and that's how I got. So I met my first movie I got was called Money for Nothing, and it's a who's who of like actors. I mean, it's a true story about a guy who finds $1 million bucks in the street. A guy from Philly called Joey Coyle. His name is Joey Coyle, and it was called Money for Nothing. And James Gandolfini was in it. John Cusack was the lead. Gandolfini played his brother, Michael Madsen. I had a scene with Michael Madsen. I was like thrilled. They flew into Pittsburgh. First movie I ever got. And Michael Madsen. Philip Seymour Hoffman was in it. Michael Rapaport. Benicio Del Toro, who I became friends with. Mm-hmm. And he wound up directing me in a film, a short film he wrote and directed called Submission with Matthew McConaughey. It's about a drug deal in a hotel. And so I stayed friends with him. After 3.5 years, I did a couple other movies. Stayed friends with Benicio. I said, Benicio, that's it. I'm done. I don't know, man. I miss my family. I haven't been home in 3.5 years. And, I will keep in touch. And if, he could get me in any films. So he got me in two movies called Basquiat, about the painter, and The Funeral, directed by Abel Ferrara. And these were films that Georgianne Walken were casting and Sheila Jaffe, casting directors for The Sopranos. And they said, do you have an agent? And I said, no. I said, well, keep in touch with us. If anything comes by, that you're right for, we'll bring in. And so I did that, and they started casting for The Sopranos, and that's how I got into that.
So did James Hoving help you get your role in The Sopranos?
No. By that time, I was back in New York. I did I did those two movies. And they said, just call us up and see, what you're right for. So they said, well, listen, we're doing this show called The Sopranos, and we want to bring you in. And at the time, I didn't want to do it because I said, well, I don't want to do TV. I just want to do film. And they said, no, you come in and do this. It's going to be big. And it was.
Well, you became an actor because you lost a lot of money gambling and decided to go to L.A., give up your restaurant,
right.
Sell your share in the restaurant, go to L.A. And try acting. Now that you actually have more money as a result of The Sopranos, are you in danger of gambling it away?
No, since I got married, I don't gamble anymore. I did lose a few dollars on the Super Bowl. I just threw all my bookie.
So, tell me one of your favorite stories about life on the set at The Sopranos.
Let's see. Well, usually when we kill someone, we take them out to dinner. I haven't got my dinner yet.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, we took Jackie Jr., we took the guy who hung himself, Bobby Fornaro. I'm waiting for, that's usually a fun night.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Joe Gennascoli played Vito Spadafore on The Sopranos, and he co-wrote a crime novel called A Meal to Die For.